Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. In January, Governor Tony Evers declared 2019 the year of clean drinking water. The declaration underscored a growing urgency over water quality concerns throughout the state and in our region. The troubles range from the potential health impacts of lead pipes in older homes, including tens of thousands of homes in central and northern Wisconsin, to polluted wells in rural areas and emerging chemical contaminants that are leaching into groundwater. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. In June, two Republican lawmakers, State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point and State Representative Scott Krug of Nakusa, were featured on this program for a discussion on their efforts to reduce nitrates in Wisconsin wells. Today, we continue our discussion on the quest for clean drinking water with State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point. Representative Shankland serves as vice chair of the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality. Later in the program, we'll be joined by Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes for additional perspective. But Katrina, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Representative, in Governor Evers' State of the State address, he promised to give water problems more attention. One notable statistic he mentioned that stood out to me was that of the 1.7 million residents who rely on private wells, 47% do not meet acceptable health standards. So 10 months in, after this statistic was released, after this declaration, what kind of progress are we seeing?
Well, I think, first of all, I want to applaud Governor Evers for declaring 2019 the year of clean drinking water. And as I've heard many people say, we shouldn't need a year to tackle clean drinking water and make sure everyone has it. But I'm so happy to see that leadership. Since the governor announced that initiative, he put tens of millions of dollars in the budget for tackling lead, nitrate, bacteria, arsenic, and PFAS. And he's also issued several executive orders regarding PFAS and lead specifically. And in addition, the legislature has acted too, which I'm thrilled to see. The speaker set up a new task force called the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality, which I serve as vice chair of. We traveled around the state to 13 locations, from Racine and Janesville and Milwaukee to Green Bay and Marinette, Menominee, Superior, Stevens Point, Tomahawk, to La Crosse and Mauston. So we really went across the state, all quadrants, and heard from folks on the ground about the water quality issues they were facing, as well as their recommendations. And the task force, now that we're done traveling, and I think we calculated we traveled about 3,000 miles across Wisconsin and heard from hundreds of people, as well as scientists, experts in the water quality hydrology issues that different parts of the state are facing based on geography and hydrogeology. We heard from farm groups, we heard from environmental groups, and we heard from folks who literally could not drink water from their tap. And so as we enter into the fall legislative session, we are about to issue our statewide recommendations regarding how we can tackle these issues and that many of us face together in the legislature. And in addition, the budget has passed and the governor put tens of millions of dollars of funds for, as I mentioned, lead and bacteria and nitrate. And some of it passed and some of it didn't. And so I think it's the task force's job to help advance some of those initiatives that maybe didn't pass scrutiny through the budget, but also make sure that we continue to have this conversation and get as much done as possible to guarantee clean drinking water for everyone.
I noticed in 2016 you wrote a column for the Cap Times. I read that. You were describing Wisconsin's groundwater as being at a crisis point. You said that this is an issue that required immediate attention. Has anything changed since then?
Yes, people finally listened. So I felt really alone when I wrote that column in the 2015-16 session. I remember my frustration with how I continued to talk on the assembly floor about how one in three people in Kewaunee County couldn't get clean drinking water because of E. coli and nitrate. And in Portage County, it was one in four. And in villages in Portage County, it's one in two. And so my frustration has finally reached a point where I think more people have recognized the situation in the legislature, because policymakers sometimes can be a little bit further behind than the public. And it sometimes does have to reach a crisis point for folks to listen. So I do want to be as grateful as possible for this task force. It served as an excellent vehicle to have to convene stakeholders of all organizations and interests on this issue. But I also want to make sure that we follow up our words with action. And I think since 2016, it's only gotten worse. We've learned in 2016, we weren't talking about this emerging contaminant known as PFAS. And now we know much more about it, and we know that it accumulates in our body, for example, it stays there, and that there's many health concerns associated with it. So that's just one example of, since I wrote that column 3 years ago, it's gotten worse. But at least the legislature, and we have an administration, the DNR especially, understand that this is a problem, and our governor and DNR secretary have said this is their number one priority. So we finally have action, and that's something I'm very heartened by.
I'd like to talk about lead lines later, but right now I'd like to focus on nitrates in rural wells. In June, we heard from Republican lawmakers on their proposed Clean Health and Water Bill. Here is a short clip from that program with Senator Patrick Teston, the Republican from Stevens Point, speaking.
And so we devised this program, this legislation, to create a new pilot program within DHS. And what it would do, if fully funded, it would create a $10 million program over the course of the next 2 years to provide homeowners up to $2,500 to receive grants to ensure that their well can be remediated or go towards a new well to ensure that when they go to the tap, they have safe, clean water to drink.
What is your view on that proposal?
Sure. So this actually was, they cut the bill in about a third and they put it in the budget at a last minute budget amendment. And the governor vetoed it because we already have an existing program that does all of this, and it's called the Well Compensation Program. The Well Compensation Program is run by the Department of Natural Resources. And so if you have a nitrate issue, an arsenic issue, a bacteria issue, you can't drink water from your tap, you actually are eligible for up to $12,000 under this program, as long as you qualify. You have to be low income for this assistance. And so this bill, after it was vetoed, was introduced and sent to the Environment Committee, which I sit on in the Assembly. And it was never given a vote because there were bipartisan concerns with it. The reason being, instead of writing $2,500 checks to people who might not need that amount for something as simple as a filter, instead what we'd like to see is that we prioritize those who have the greatest contamination and getting the treatment, the remediation, maybe a new well as needed. So we want to recommend changes to the well compensation program. And that's something I've been working on for 3 years. I've had a bill for the last few years that changes the well comp program so that anyone who has contaminated nitrate has access to it. You would no longer need to have livestock to access it. And in addition, the governor actually put it in his budget and suggested that we federalize all the standards so that anyone down to 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate would have access to it, which I was excited about. And while that didn't pass, I'm now having bipartisan conversations with my colleagues about changing the well compensation grant program so that it does stay within the DNR. We want to make sure it's scientific and that there are two well tests that confirm you have contamination before we give you state money. And then secondly, there's the well compensation grant program actually covers more initiatives. So it covers reverse osmosis, it covers filters, it covers well reconstruction, it covers sealing a well and abandoning it if needed, and it even covers connecting to a public utility. And so that's a more holistic and comprehensive approach, and I think the best method for us that's also the most responsible financially is for us to work together on an existing program within the DNR. And I know my colleagues on the task force, the Water Quality Task Force, are interested in advancing that bill now.
The Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism report, they did a study a couple of years ago. They did this thing called Failure at the Faucet. There were a series of stories on the drinking water issue, and their report showed that hundreds of thousands of Wisconsin's residents are at risk of consuming drinking water tainted with substances like lead, nitrate, disease-causing bacteria and viruses, even the naturally occurring heavy metals and other contaminants. The report also showed an increasing number of residents using private wells are drinking unsafe levels of nitrate. I'd like to ask you, what are some of the reasons that this problem persists?
So I think first and foremost, we need more and greater public awareness. So when we have about 1 million Wisconsinites who get their water from private wells, we need to make sure that every person with a private well is actually testing their well every year and knows what's in their water. And in many cases across the state, we've discovered people do not. And that can lead to really detrimental health effects. And in some cases, much worse. So for example, there was a woman in the Central Sands who lost her baby because she didn't know she was drinking nitrate contaminated water. And that created, you know, it was devastating to her family and her community. And as a result, they actually started testing every person's well in their town and then in their region and now their county. And their county has funds set up from agriculture in that region to not only provide money for well testing, but also for water treatment for everyone. But I think at the end of the day, we need better education and greater public awareness as to what it means to have a private well. It isn't just making sure that the well is constructed right, because sometimes if you have a construction issue, you could actually, that's how bacteria can get in, for example. But it's also making sure that your nitrate levels aren't fluctuating to the point where they go above 10 milligrams per liter, which is the federal and state health standard. So at the end of the day, I think first and foremost, we need greater awareness of the need to test every single year and the need to find a nonpartisan resource who can help you kind of not only figure out the results and what they mean, but also hopefully they don't have a financial interest in just selling you something and just selling you the most expensive solution, but also helping you alleviate the problem, because it could be the fertilizer that you're using in your lawn, or it could be something greater than that, right? So at the end of the day, because we have over a million people in Wisconsin relying on private well water, so they're not led by a municipal utility who's required by federal law to treat the water to a certain standard, we need to ensure that they have the resources. And that's part of why I'm so passionate about making sure we change the well compensation grant program so we can get more people funds they need for remediation. But I also think we have to do more to prevent the contamination altogether. And that's really what I believe the task force's role should be here, is it isn't just about using taxpayer money to clean up our water. It's passing policy to change the way that we manage the land so that we're reducing the level of nitrogen leaching, the nitrate contamination that goes into our water, and same for bacteria.
I'm glad you brought up the municipal water issue. We think of municipal water as being largely safe, but in 2012, anyway, researchers definitively linked the presence of viruses in 14 Wisconsin municipal water systems to acute gastrointestinal illnesses. More than 73,000 people use water by 60 municipal water systems that don't disinfect. That's according to the most recent DNR figures. Some of those communities are in our area: Tomahawk, Crandon, Three Lakes, Rice Lake, and several water systems for correctional facilities also do not disinfect. What's your take on that?
So that's troubling, and that's something we actually heard from the Wisconsin Rural Well Water Association on our travels as well. And I think the municipal water utilities are only as good as how we regulate them. And especially, you know, on the federal level, the EPA has drinking water health standards for many contaminants, but not for everything. So, for example, we don't have one for PFAS yet either, in addition to these viruses that can leach in. And so we need, as government officials, whether it's on the state, local, or federal level, to be pushing for action when we are aware of new health standard issues with PFAS, for example, or when we hear about the fact that some of these municipal water utilities are not disinfecting. And I think ratepayers for these municipal utilities also need to make those calls and ask, you know, they're paying good money to that utility and they should be using it to protect their public health. That being said, I would say municipal utilities are governed by much greater standards, whereas our private wells, there's no regulation, there's no requirement that you test, there's no requirement that anyone even get information regarding how to test. So what I'd like to change on the state level is we provide more information to everyone, regardless of how they get their water, about what their responsibility is and how we can help them, so they're not alone in that effort to define what's in their water and know what's in their water, and then secondly, remediate it if they need to.
State Representative Katrina Shankland is our guest today on Route 51, a response to an earlier show on Republican legislative efforts to improve drinking water in our region. You can find a link to the earlier show, which aired June 13th, on WPR.org/Route 51. When we return, we'll talk more about the potential health risks involved and some possible solutions being discussed at the state level. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. State Representative Katrina Shankland is our guest today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on efforts to improve water quality in central and northern Wisconsin. A little later, we'll be joined by Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes for additional perspective. An earlier show that aired June 13th featured two Republican lawmakers, State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point and State Representative Scott Krug of Nakusa. During that program, they discussed their proposed Clean Water Health and Wellness Act. That bill would establish a pilot program to help rural well owners test their water, then work with state officials on remediation efforts that includes potential grant money. We talked a little bit about this earlier. I'd like to circle back to it. What is the status of that bill?
So it had a hearing in the Environment Committee last month. We haven't had a vote on it. As I mentioned, we heard from Republicans and Democrats who had concerns with it, especially given an existing program already exists called the Wisconsin Wild Compensation Program within the Department of Natural Resources. And so I think given that the bill has already been vetoed through the budget and that it hasn't gotten a vote in the Environment Committee, what I'd like to focus on is how we can work together to get everyone clean drinking water. And so the legislation called Assembly Bill 21, which would modify the well compensation program to increase income limits for people to get clean water, would remove the livestock requirement from folks who have nitrate contaminated wells and who would help people with the most contamination get access to state funds first. That's the bill that I personally would like to see move, not just because I authored it, but also because it addresses what we heard at every single task force hearing, 13 hearings in a row, that the well compensation program needs to be reformed to better so everyone can access it. And that's what I'd like to see happen.
One of the things that I asked our two Republican guests in an earlier show was to talk about CAFOs, the concentrated animal feeding operations. These are industrial life-sized livestock operations, and the number in the state has risen every year since 2005. This is what Republican State Representative Scott Krug of Nakusa had to say about that.
I think it's a little bit of a misnomer that the biggest nitrate contamination areas are surrounding the CAFOs. Mm-hmm. I think for some of those circumstances, that's true. But I think the bigger question we've got to answer is, how do we help the small to medium farmer to introduce less nitrates into the creeks that run through their farm operations? I know that, you know, people, like Pat said, the emotions are high when it comes to CAFOs and things like that. But when you've got a, you know, concentrated area of animal operations that has a highly regulated system of treating nitrates and phosphorus and other nutrients, I don't think they're so much a problem as the smaller grower may be.
What's your take on that?
So I think first and foremost, I want to point out that CAFOs, when it comes to enforcement, have not had typically the type of enforcement that the state law has already been put on the books over the past few years. So, for example, under the DNR, there were supposed to be additional positions funded in the DNR to make sure our CAFOs are actually following the rules. And we still haven't gotten to the point where we need, where we've seen that funding for those five DNR positions. When I wrote that column back in 2016, part of the reason why was because we had seen an audit in 2016 from the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau that showed that 94% of the time, the DNR was not following its own water quality rules. So when CAFOs are supposed to self-report their discharge, that wasn't happening. When enforcement staff was supposed to come in for violations, that wasn't happening. And so 94% of the time not following your own rules, that's a really significant issue. And it isn't because they're willfully ignoring it. It was because they didn't have enough staff. So one of the things that Governor Evers tried to do in this budget was put five new DNR positions to monitor this growing industry and ensuring that, you know, CAFOs have to have pollutant discharge permits, that they're actually following the rules related to those permits so the water quality is being protected. But unfortunately, the legislature removed the fee increases to that proposal. They did reallocate four positions, but we are still, as taxpayers, subsidizing that regulation. Now, anyone else with a WPDES permit, that's really a pollution discharge permit, they are not subsidized by taxpayers to pollute. They literally have to pay the price of that pollution themselves. And so what I'm concerned about is, why should taxpayers have to subsidize this pollution when we could fund it by their own fees? When they pay the DNR to have oversight, they should be funding those positions with that money. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. I think adding those four vacant positions in to the DNR to help enforce the law is great, but we could do even more. And at the end of the day, when we talk about pollution and who's responsible for what I want to ensure is no one should have to worry worry about living next to a CAFO and not having clean drinking water, but unfortunately there are many people in the state who do. And that isn't the only problem, but it surely is a problem for those who live right down the road. And the reason why is because of the vast amount of manure that they are required to store or treat before discharging and in a responsible way. And when you have a manure lagoon breach, which happened recently in Kewaunee County, for example, that affects everyone's water and they can literally see it in their water. When your water's brown coming out of the tap, you know something's wrong. So I don't want to minimize the role that the state could play in CAFO oversight. We do have a responsibility, and I think taxpayers would be perturbed to know that they're subsidizing CAFOs who definitely could afford the opportunity to pay for their enforcement and oversight.
And what is the state of CAFOs as it relates to the region's fisheries?
That's a great question. So, you know, if you are anywhere near like a river or stream, a Class A trout stream, for example, CAFOs are regulated. They do have rules related to some will have berms near a stream so the runoff can't go down. They'll have various hard practices that will ensure that the manure is segregated and kept safe. The problem is it could be one electrical malfunction, depending on, you know, what kind of lagoon you have, or one construction issue, or one severe rain event away from runoff that could go in to the rivers or streams. And it's happened. It absolutely has. And I think that's why the public shares some skepticism about are CAFOs regulated enough, given that, especially if you look at where they've grown in places like Kewaunee County, where the depth to bedrock is so slim, so narrow that the CAFO runoff literally just goes right into their groundwater and they see it in their tap then. I think that this issue is prevalent in areas where there's high numbers of CAFOs concentrated in one county or one region where there's sensitive soils. And that's why I think what I'd like to see happen is restoring local control to the livestock siting law so that people can be more thoughtful about where they place a CAFO instead of us having to deal with it down the road where there's so many and they're causing these severe drinking water issues in addition to other, you know, especially when there's concentrated agriculture of both growing and CAFOs in one region with sensitive soil, you're going to see this continue to happen and you're going to have nitrate and bacteria issues. Central Sands and Kewaunee County are both great examples of that. I think at the end of the day, you know, let our local counties and local units of government figure this out. What is the best place to site and zone these properties so that they have more of a, I would say, protected area for their agriculture, and so they're not affecting down the road our not only our lakes, rivers, and streams, but also their neighbors.
I'd like to talk a bit about lead exposure in drinking water. Can you explain for listeners why lead is such a hot topic in the discussion over clean drinking water in the state?
Absolutely. So lead is a toxic metal. It can be really harmful to human health, and there's really no known safe blood lead level, so any exposure whatsoever is an issue. So For example, the maximum contaminant level that you should have in your body is literally zero, and that's according to the EPA. You should not have lead in your body. However, it can bioaccumulate. That means it stays in your body over time, and it can enter your body through drinking water when you have plumbing materials containing lead and that corrodes. So corrosive pipes, for example, is one of the primary causes. And then there's also a lot of lead service lines in old homes. They're typically found in old cities and homes that were built before 1986. So for kids, this can affect their health, especially there's no law right now that requires daycares to test and schools to test routinely for lead. So these small children, this can affect their brain development. It can affect their health. And it can even affect their behavior. There's some studies that show that behavior related to lead and then the propensity to crime down the road are also there. It's a possible link there, too. So we need to fund our water utilities to replace their lead service lines, in my opinion. I also think we need to help our schools and daycares remove lead service lines from their homes and schools. And I also think down the road, we need to look more holistically at how many communities do we have left with lead service lines. I know Green Bay, for example, funded theirs by themselves. And Madison, many years ago, replaced all of them, thinking very comprehensively and well ahead of their time. But there's places, you know, Milwaukee is one that has many lead service lines that need to be replaced. And can we do either a tax credit or bonding, as the governor had proposed, $40 million in bonding to help communities across the state? That didn't didn't get traction through the budget, but we're still pushing for it as a separate bill. Because at the end of the day, if this bioaccumulates, it stays in our body and it can affect human behavior, especially of small children. Why would we not then think it's our moral obligation to help folks afford the cost of replacing these lead service lines and lead pipes?
A proposal to study lead-poisoned infants to determine whether drinking water was the cause was scrapped by the Department of Health Services in 2016. Now, the agency said it decided against the study because it would not have differentiated the effects of lead paint from lead plumbing, both of which could be found in old homes. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's disappointing. I know this year we've had the Department of Health Services with us at every task force hearing, and they've actually testified in Milwaukee when we had our hearing there on lead. And they talked about they have a lead abatement program that they did get more money from in the budget, thankfully, that helps with whether you have lead in your home regarding lead paint or plumbing. And they go in, and essentially what it does is it's kind of a prevention and awareness tool, but they only have the resources to do a few homes at a time, right? So I think their lead abatement program is great, but they also need funds to help our kids who do have lead poisoning. And I believe it's in, if it's not every county, it's nearly every county in the state where there are kids now under the age of 6 who have the presence of lead in their blood. And that to me is a disaster. And it's something that, if it's preventable, which it is, right? This is simply removing lead pipes and lead service lines, then we have a responsibility to fix it. And I think partnering with local government and the state, and I've even reached out to the federal government to figure out how we can get resources from them on this issue, we bear a responsibility to our children and their children to make sure that their health is of the utmost priority.
You mentioned earlier about the state law that doesn't mandate that drinking water be investigated as a source when a child is found to have lead poisoning. There was a bill that would have lowered the level of lead poisoning that triggers an investigation and required that water, in addition to paint, be examined as a source. That died in the legislature in 2016 without a hearing. So currently an investigation is triggered only after a child's blood level reaches at least 3 times the amount that indicates lead poisoning. And even then, water isn't required to be tested. Is this an issue that's getting any traction at the state level at this point?
So we definitely have gotten more traction this year than in any other year before. And in fact, in our task force recommendations, we will be including the need to test schools and daycares for lead. There are 2 bipartisan bills that would do that. They're called, I think one is called the Schools Act, and the other is for daycares, and it would require testing as well as replacement in those areas where we know for a fact these kids' blood is being poisoned by lead, right? So I think that's very helpful, but we also need to fund, we need to help utilities replace their lead service lines. And we did pass a law in 2017 to help them with that by putting it on the tax bill, but also funding the homes. And that's where most people can't afford to replace all of their lead pipes at once. So even a tax credit, and Representative Grzynski from Green Bay has a tax credit bill that I strongly support and I'm co-sponsor of, a tax credit could help offset that cost, since there is a human health element to all of this. Society does better when people are healthy, and especially that we know, there's a behavioral element to lead exposure. Why would we then not want to invest? And this is the same argument for investing in early childhood. It's the exact same return on investment when we invest in our health, the health of our small children, especially.
Is there something you'd like to see local governments do to help mitigate this issue?
Yeah, I think local government should put forward a plan and figure out. I know when I first heard about lead in our water, I went on a map to Portage County, which I represent, to see how many lead lines were left. And at that point, I think it was about 6. And I made a call over to see, hey, what's your plan for this? And we turned out we were pretty lucky. Things were relatively easy to fix. But in places like, I know there are lead service lines issues in Green Bay, for example. Wausau, Madison, fixed all of theirs, but Milwaukee has a huge amount of issues. Watertown is another one, I think. I would like to see, could they sit down and figure out a plan for how many years would it take, how much money would it take, and how could they ask the state, here's our plan, how much do you need, so that we have a better estimation. When my colleagues and I on the task force meet and we try to estimate how much money it would take to cover every bacteria, arsenic, lead, PFAS, and nitrate issue, we're like, well, is it billions of dollars? And the problem is we don't even fully know. We know for private wells that's easy to estimate because we know how many there are, but I would like to see a comprehensive plan from our local governments to see in how many years could you do this. And I know the city of Milwaukee has come to our offices and told us they are working on a plan for their lead service lines, and they're, as a city, funding it as well. But I think to educate the state legislators about the scope of this issue is so broad, and it scares me a little bit to know that these kids have blood, lead in their blood and might not even know it. And so I want to make sure we have a long-term plan for all of this.
Funding for the state's childhood lead poisoning prevention program shrank by more than 20% since 2011. I noticed that. Do you see any potential for increasing their funding in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm pretty confident. I'd have to pull it up, but I believe the governor put much more money in to his budget for not just lead abatement, but lead poisoning grants under the Department of Health Services. He also, through executive order, created what some are calling a lead czar. And that's really to do kind of what I talked about on the local level, but for the state level, that long-term comprehensive plan to evaluate the need and the issue and to help us find funding and policy recommendations. You might be able to deduct from this conversation that the legislature has really just started acting within the last couple of years. And I think part of it has just been a lack of awareness. And now that we have the year of clean drinking water and the governor's leading on so many different issues related to water quality, it's helped us stay focused on this issue. So I hope to see more budget funding down the road for it. I know there are many people who are interested in this issue as it relates to our health. And it's startling to know that the funding has gone down in the past few years.
Do you see this as a bipartisan issue?
Yeah, I don't think it should be partisan at all. At the end of the day, I don't think anyone wants kids' blood lead levels to have any bearing on their opportunities for the future.
All right. Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland is our guest today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on efforts to improve water quality in central and northern Wisconsin. It's a response to an earlier show on reducing nitrates in the state's rural wells. You can find a link to the earlier program, which aired June 13th, on WPR.org/Route 51. Coming up next, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes will join the conversation and give additional insight into potential legislative solutions to the clean water problem. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. State Representative Katrina Shankland, the Democrat from Stevens Point, is in the studio today. She's talking about efforts to improve water quality in central and northern Wisconsin and responding to an earlier program featuring two Republican lawmakers, State Senator Patrick Teston, also of Stevens Point, and State Representative Scott Krug of Nakusa, who discussed their efforts to reduce nitrates in Wisconsin wells. You can find a link to the earlier show, which aired June 13th, on WPR.org/Route 51. Joining the discussion now is Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Lieutenant Governor, welcome to Route 51.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So, Lieutenant Governor, during his campaign, Governor Evers said that the DNR's funding cuts under former Governor Walker's administration led to lax enforcement and oversight of water quality. What steps are being taken to address that?
Well, the governor recently signed executive order number 40 to make sure that we are a state that takes this issue very seriously. And that relates to PFAS contamination in Wisconsin as one example of a step that we're going to be taking in addition to declaring 2019 the year of clean drinking water. And when I go to events and people start to applaud the fact that we declared the year of clean drinking water, I try to stop them immediately because while it's a great thing and I'm so proud that the governor did it, it's a shame that we had to. People's drinking water is something that should not be taken for granted, as well as air quality. It's along the list of a host of climate issues that we're dealing with, things that have been ignored for the last 8 years. But it's not about looking back. It's about looking forward and making sure that Wisconsin is a place that's equitable for all. And that means people's health and safety shouldn't be taken for granted.
Let's talk a little bit about PFAS. Katrina, you wanted to talk about this a little bit. Let's explain what they are and why they're a concern.
Sure. So PFAS are a large group. So it's thousands of compounds of human-made chemicals used in consumer and industrial products. And they've actually been used since the 1950s, but we really didn't get evidence of health effects until the early 2000s. So PFAS are found in food packaging, nonstick cookware, carpet, clothing, and firefighting foam. And about 60% of the PFAS come from food products. So if you are grabbing something that's non-compostable through a drive-thru, odds are there's probably PFAS in there. The problem with PFAS is there are actually real health concerns. It could be, and it's known to be carcinogenic and also bioaccumulating, so it stays in your body for long periods of time. We're talking about years. So what we need to do is, first of all, map out exactly where PFAS are in Wisconsin. And the governor provided funding in his budget budget, which passed to do that. But in addition, we also need to make sure, after knowing where the PFAS are and remediating that, that we're doing more to prevent them from happening altogether. And one bill that I strongly support that I know the governor and lieutenant governor helped introduce as well is called the CLEAR Act, which would give the DNR regulatory authority to ensure we're not using firefighting foam, for example, found with significant amounts of PFAS that are then being discharged into our groundwater, our drinking water, in addition to many other issues regarding regulatory standards for safe levels of PFAS. And in addition, so the Department of Health Services recently developed groundwater enforcement standards for PFAS so that when they're above a certain level, the DNR can come in and say, actually, you're not allowed to have that level of PFAS here. This is detrimental and harmful to human health, and we're going to help you get rid of it and find a safe solution. And so at the state level, a lot has been done on PFAS. Lieutenant Governor Barnes mentioned EO number 40, which would also create a PFAS coordinating council, which would help across state agencies and the administration to plan out how we not only advance initiatives that are thoughtful to prevent further PFAS contamination, but also how we clean it up, because there are long-term health effects for those who've already been exposed to them.
Lieutenant Governor, some Republicans think that the governor's Year of Clean Water proposals is sending too much clean water money to Milwaukee to remove lead lines and not enough to other parts of the state. So what's your response to that?
I think they should do a better job of understanding math. This is where the population is. Of course, a larger sum of the money, but when it's broken down per person, there's not an increase in funding for people in Milwaukee. So it's another way that Milwaukee is continued to be used as a punching bag. And it's unfortunate that they resort to petty politics when the actual health and safety of people of our state is on the line. It's been on the line for far too long, and we can't sit around and play these sort of games and pitting one region of the state against another, because that's simply not the case, especially when the public is just being misled when they frame it that way.
Lieutenant Governor, funding for childhood lead poisoning prevention is down. The representative and I were talking about this earlier in the program. Past proposals to better protect children from lead and drinking water have stalled in the legislature. What is the current administration's stance on these types of proposals?
Well, the governor created a position to oversee our response to lead contamination in our children, because that is the necessary route. Again, it's another issue of safety. I mean, how long are we going to jeopardize the livelihoods of people who live in the state simply because of politics? It all goes back to politics, which is the unfortunate part. And yes, the highest concentration of children who've been exposed to lead contamination, yes, it's in Milwaukee, it's in southeastern Wisconsin. Does that mean that these children matter less than children in any other part of the state? No. And as somebody from Milwaukee, a child who lives in Hudson, their lives have the same significance as the lives of children in Milwaukee. And we have to start taking a statewide approach, not these regional battles, because they've gotten us nowhere. In fact, they've taken us backwards.
So circling back to the issue of contaminated wells in rural areas, there are restrictions on manure spreading that will require farmers to make some changes that aim to alleviate water quality concerns. So how can you balance the need for manure spreading restrictions in a way that's practical for farmers?
Well, the thing about that, too, is if you go across the country, farmers are adapting way more sustainable agriculture practices. And a lot of this stuff, even if you look at PFAS contamination, the way that agriculture has been done, some of the times you don't find out about the harmful effects until years and decades down the line. But now that we know the actual impact, it's a moment for us to adjust the way that we do things, and also be able to work with farmers and not do it in some punitive way that penalizes them for practices that they've been using. But we have to be in a moment where we help them adjust and transition. As we know, unfortunately, nitrate is Wisconsin's most widespread groundwater contaminant. And some counties, more than 20% of private wells exceeded the nitrate groundwater standard. And this is, again, it's about clean water. And that's why the governor declared 2019 the year clean drinking water. It's not just a one thing that exists in one part of the state. It's a statewide problem that we have to get a hold of. And we know that crops can't use all the nitrogen that's applied to the fields, and nitrate leaching is especially prominent in permeable soils. So when we look across the country, and that's another reason why we have this task force as well. And just yesterday, Governor Evers signed Executive Order Number 52, which created the Climate Change Task Force. And this isn't directly a climate change issue, but it is a climate issue. And in that task force, we're going to have representation from all parts of the state, all backgrounds, all professions, people from different demographics and different regions to be able to provide the most effective solutions to the problems that we're facing. And that includes farmers on this task force as well, so that we can be in a place where we're having conversations that not around people but with people.
All right. We talked about the CLEAR Act. Lieutenant Governor, what's your perspective on the CLEAR Act?
Like I said, it goes back to what are we going to prioritize here in Wisconsin? Are we going to say it costs too much money to save people's lives? That's not a stance that I ever want to take. If things have been going wrong, as they have been, we have to be in a position to fix it. And if government can find ways to prioritize larger corporations, many of which have led to this crisis, then we should be able to at least invest that much into the people and making sure that they have a fair shot.
Well, the DNR staffing level for capital permitting and enforcement was one policy matter in the deliberations over Wisconsin's 2019-21 state budget. So where the funding for proposed new positions would come from shaped up to be quite a political sticking point. Where does that stand now?
Yeah, I mean, and it feels like almost anything is going to be a political standoff, unfortunately. As we saw when the governor introduced the budget, which was the people's budget, the budget that was put together with input from people all across the state of Wisconsin, regular folks, not put together by politicians, not put together by lobbyists, but everyday people who live and enjoy Wisconsin. And we have a responsibility to them. And when it comes to the issue of the DNR, I mean, you look at over the last 8 years where scientists were essentially purged from the agency. People were forced out and people couldn't even talk about climate change. It wasn't a great place to work. But I'm so thankful for those who stuck it out, people who remained and, waited for a better day in the state to come where their work wouldn't be in vain or ignored. So with that being said, it's important that we fund those positions within the Department of Natural Resources. In Wisconsin, that's what we have. That's what people travel here to visit. People come here for environmental tourism. We have what our neighbors don't have when it comes to natural resources. We have to do everything we can do to protect that, and we also have to lead with science and make evidence-based decisions so that we don't run into the same issues 10, 20, 50 years down the line like we have right now with PFAS contamination or with nitrate contamination in our water.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss earlier this year announced his own initiative, a Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality, saying that every Wisconsinite should have access to clean drinking water. Representative Shanklin, you are vice chair of that task force. What's happening with this right now?
So after our 13 hearings across the state, 3,000 miles, and I would say many hours of research, we are going to put out our task force recommendations, which our nonpartisan legislative council attorneys are writing right now. And those recommendations will tackle all the different contaminants we talked about today, from nitrates and bacteria to lead and PFAS. And in addition, we're going to be putting out our legislation. And currently we're in that process of negotiating. You can imagine with 16 legislators, both parties, the Senate and Assembly, it can be a little bit of a negotiation among all parties. But what I'm committed to is actively advocating for a long-term policy change so that we're preventing contamination from happening altogether. And in addition, I really want to see a state clean water fund so that we have resources every single year, not just one budget to another, to draw from to protect and advance clean water for everyone.
Lieutenant Governor, how helpful has the task force been in determining future policy for your administration?
Well, the thing is, the task force has been effective in the sense that in those hearings, people have been able to get their opinions out. And like I said, with the feedback that we've been hearing is people want funded improvement for mapping capabilities related to land use, geology and hydrogeology, increased awareness and incentivizing private well testing, improving and increasing well compensation funding, strengthening environmental laws to make sure that we're protecting drinking water. So, these are things that we've known for a long time. Sure, I'm delighted that the speaker finally found it necessary to address this issue. But I question that if the governor didn't declare 2019 the year of clean drinking water, would the speaker have even found it necessary to try to do this on his own when he's had all the time to do so?
Well, farm organizations like the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and Dairy Business Association say they would like state funding for county conservation staff or cost sharing to help farmers meet new standards. Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, each county is going to be unique in what their needs are, but I do think that initially we have to fund those positions in the Department of Natural Resources so then we can finally map this thing out and figure out, which counties are the most impacted, which we already know, but how can we best allocate resources after that? I think our priority should be funding those Department of Natural Resources positions, but we also want to be able to adequately make sure counties are able to meet their own unique and individual needs, however that may happen.
We asked Representative Shanklin about the role of local governments. What do you think the role of local governments should be in mitigating these issues?
I think the local government has a tremendous role to play, and I think that this is also a great opportunity when it comes to addressing all sorts of environmental concerns, because there isn't the threat of preemption that existed before, and I believe in local control, and when I say that, I mean it. And that means that and you look at across the state as well, you have county executives, mayors, village presidents who've all gone the way of, implementing their own sort of sustainability efforts. And I think that we want to be in a place to encourage that work, especially when the legislature continues to want to engage in a standoff anytime we try to do something to improve the lives of people across Wisconsin. It's incumbent upon local government. I call on even more local government entities to act to address the whatever varying level of crisis exists.
A question for both of you. What is the biggest change you've seen in the Capitol with respect to the water issue? Representative Shanklin, you perhaps
sure.
Answer first.
So I've seen more urgency, greater urgency in the past year than I ever had before. And I do credit our new science-based DNR at Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes for helping lead the way on declaring it the year of clean drinking water and leading on so many issues. I also think because of the human element to this, I've heard so many personal stories about grandma who is afraid to bathe her grandkids in the water at her home, to people who are living on lakes with such toxic algae blooms they can't even use the lake, that I think we have been compelled to act. And I'm really looking forward to the next few months as we debate legislation regarding protecting clean drinking water for everyone and getting everyone clean drinking water. I also want to mention real briefly the county conservationist question. We are very committed to getting more funding for our county conservationists because they are the boots on the ground for folks in every county. They are protecting our lakes, rivers, and streams, and they're helping farmers reduce nitrate, for example, and responsibly manure spreading. So that's one of the things you'll see from the task force, but you'll also see, I hope, a greater sense of urgency than you've ever seen from the legislature before. And that's partly because of Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes' leadership on clean water, and their leadership inspired us.
Lieutenant Governor, what about you? What is the biggest change you've seen in the Capitol with respect to the water issue? And perhaps what is your hope for 2020 as it relates to clean water?
I would just echo much of what Representative Shanklin said, because there does seem to be a different urgency. And in an unbiased way, I can say that, as a member of the legislature, I didn't hear this same, I didn't see the same urgency. There were people like Representative Shanklin who were fighting all the time, sounding the alarm of the issue, but it fell on deaf ears of the administration. It's a different day now, and we are partners in this work. It's not, and there's not an adversarial approach to something that we should all come to expect to be able to appreciate, such as clean drinking water. And I look forward to 2020. I look forward to recommendations from that task force being implemented. I look forward to other measures that we've been trying to put in place. And I look forward to our own task force, Governor's task force on climate change, to be able to also assist and supplement a lot of that work that's coming out of the water quality task force, and to try to take it even further. This is again a broad range of folks from across the state, and the best part about it too is that we're working with impacted communities. It's not we're trying to leave nobody behind when it comes to finding equitable solutions for everybody in all corners of the state and all 72 counties. So with that being said, I am very optimistic about the direction that we're going. I hope that the legislature matches that commitment.
All right. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, State Representative Katrina Shanklin, the Democrat from Stevens Point, and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program, along with a link to an earlier discussion on the clean water issue from two Republican lawmakers at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll host members of the Wausau Paranormal Research Society for a spirited discussion on the most haunted places in central and northern Wisconsin. Until then, we're heading out of town.